project that's celebrating its bar mitzvah.
He's got really epic facial hair, which I truly appreciate.
Wait for that. Welcome back to the show, Douglas Soltis, editor-in-chief of BetaKit, tech site BetaKit.
The award-winning BetaKit.
Ottawa is offering a brave face.
Canada is aligned with the United States already, and we're going to be able to do good things together.
How do we deal with the looming 10% tariff that will for sure be announced across the board?
Defense spending remains a major sore spot. Others will surely arrive.
We take the border very seriously. Very seriously.
Most of Trump's cabinet, from Homan, from people like Mike Waltz, they've actually not just said nasty things about Trudeau himself. They've actually argued that they would like to see Pierre Poilievre as prime minister.
I mean, Trump would love nothing more than keep Trudeau in power, because he can walk all over him and he can take his money. When Trudeau quadruples the carbon tax to 61 cents a liter, Trump's going to be on the phone with all of our companies saying, hey, I heard about the big tax hike up there. Why don't you come down here? There's zero carbon tax.
Douglas, I don't know what the word is for when the media is fear-mongering, but we're not fear-mongering enough. Is there a word?
It's like the meanwhile in Canada angle to this stuff.
The headlines have been very, very dark around the Trump victory, but I think it's justified. Toronto Star opinion piece, when Trump comes calling for our water, Canada must be ready. Globe and Mail opinion, Canada is far from ready for the chaos coming our way. CTV News, Canada bracing for tough talks as Trump's picks call northern border an extreme vulnerability. Financial Post, Trump, all roads lead to a weaker loony. The Taai, here come Trump's concentration camps. Lee. Politico gives us some details on exactly why we should be afraid as we're learning about Trump's cabinet. You've got Representative Michael Waltz, who's going to be the national security advisor. He has accused Canada of being weak on China. Marco Rubio, incoming Secretary of State, has called Trudeau's remarks about the death of Castro shameful and embarrassing. He said that Canada's decision to take in Gaza refugees poses a national security threat to the U.S. northern border. Stephen Miller, the Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy, incoming. He's called our Prime Minister the far-left Trudeau and has said Canada has become increasingly authoritarian and despotic under Trudeau. Mike Huckabee, who has been nominated the U.S. Ambassador to Israel, he hasn't held back. He calls our Prime Minister Justin Blackface Trudeau and says that our Prime Minister has fake eyebrows. Huh, interesting. Elon Musk, who bafflingly is going to be heading up the Doge Department, the Department of Government Efficiency, along with Vivek Ramaswamy, he has said Canada is dying and that Trudeau is trying to crush free speech. All of these guys just seem like right-wing trolls who just know two things that, like, Alex Jones told them about Canada, and they are the cabinet.
And yet they will be the functional government, which is where maybe when we're triangulating on levels of fear-mongering and what is too much and too little, we should really dig into that.
Yeah, like, here's Trump's cabinet. They all hate us and kind of use us as a rhetorical punching bag. Where is the good news for Canada? Is it in bad taste to search for, like, is there an upside to the Trump victory? This is not me talking here. This is something that The Logic published. The Logic, of course, covers tech. They are a competitor of yours. Marty Patrickin has a story in The Logic. Trump's win has Quebec's tech sector scared and excited. He qualifies it a bit, but this is the upside, the brighter side of a Trump victory. Here's what he says. The reasons why Quebec's tech sector are happy-ish about Trump are bumper sticker simple. I'll quote here. The president-elect says he will cut the corporate tax rate, make estate and wealth tax cuts permanent. He's toyed with the idea of eliminating personal income taxes altogether. Critically for the tech sector, he won't likely tax capital gains or dividends. He's against guardrails on AI, saying they hinder its development. Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance, meanwhile, is a faux hillbilly turned venture capitalist backed by Musk and fellow techno-utopist Peter Thiel. The Trump administration is sort of already captured by big tech, which is good news for Canadian tech, I guess, maybe.
Okay, let me start and say that I think The Logic, which is also an award-winning publication, does some really good work. I like Marty a lot personally. He's got really epic facial hair, which I truly appreciate. But I think the framing of this story is that really standard, like, bad global news? What's the Canadian angle? Maybe good for business, like Central America on fire. What is that going to do for mining in Canada? And I think we can maybe push for a more holistic evaluation of what's going on. We've got 7 weeks between now and Trump's second term to learn the lessons of 2016 or this past election. This is no longer just like, hey, we've got, what's the John Mulaney skit, a horse in the hospital.
This guy being the president, it's like there's a horse loose in a hospital. I think eventually everything's going to be okay, but I have no idea what's going to happen next. And neither do any of you, and neither do your parents, because there's a horse loose in the hospital. It's never happened before.
This is not just a chaos agent in administration. This is promise of mass deportations. This is a policy of revenge and retribution.
That's a relevant one for the tech sector, because when Trump had his first proposed Muslim ban, all of the tech companies wrote an open letter saying, like, look, we need to hire from all around the world. A lot of very talented Muslim people work here.
Yes.
Back then, it was like tech versus Trump, and Trudeau was Mr. Tech. And now it's like flipped.
A lot has changed. So that's almost 8 years ago, right after the President Trump's travel ban preventing 7 Muslim-majority countries from entering the U.S., BetaKit was actually involved in this. We were among the group that drafted and then published this open letter following a tweet from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau saying, welcome to Canada. I think that finally had like 3,500 signatories from 2,200 different companies basically saying diversity is our strength. A lot has changed in those 8 years, and not just the federal administration walking back their immigration standards. I'm more interested, rather than whether or not a tariff policy is going to help Canadian businesses, or, hey, Trump doesn't want to regulate crypto, so that's going to be good for some of the crypto mining facilities in Quebec. I think a lot of attention should be placed upon the people 8 years ago who would sign a letter against some of those policies and check in 8 years later what they're thinking and feeling now.
What do you mean?
Well, you have CEO Toby Lukey of Shopify, who was one of the signatories of that open letter, basically saying this is not something that we should be doing. Like, we believe in diversity.
Oh, you're saying they had a spine back then. Where are they now? Where's Jeff Bezos, who like bought the Washington Post to have like a check on power and then withdrew an endorsement against Trump because he's like kissing the ring?
Yeah.
Where are all of these guys?
I don't want to put it in terms of a spine, but I'll note Brian Merchant, who's a tech writer, said something really interesting about this. Like, in Trump, Silicon Valley kind of got what it wanted, a president that will kneecap antitrust efforts, embrace deregulation and defang labor laws. That's where the J.D. Vance and the Peter Thiel thing comes in. I think there is this contingent of people in Canada, in the tech ecosystem, that have been watching Canada's productivity decline, housing become an issue, watching from a tech perspective, a bunch of federal commitments to innovation just really not come through.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're seeing things like Elon being person number two with the U.S. administration. They watched him cut 50 to whatever percent of Twitter's employees and then turn that into a piece of leverage. And I think over the last 8 years, as things have changed, I think they're reevaluating their perspective on some of this stuff. And I think rather than being like, which policy point is going to benefit these companies and hurt these others, without talking about, again, the mass deportations, we're not holistically looking at everything going on here. This is not a rational actor doing these things, and we shouldn't compartmentalize the impacts of these things.
After the break, we'll take a look at one of Justin Trudeau's many costumes over the years, a costume that he no longer wears, and that is his tech bro costume. Look at this, like 2016 headlines about Trudeau. Trudeau markets Canada as a tech hub and bid for global investment at Davos. Justin Trudeau targets billionaires, tech moguls at secretive Sun Valley conference. That was in CBC. The Guardian, Justin Trudeau's giant corporate giveaway. Like, his criticism was that he was too nice and too beloved by the tech companies. Maclean's, why does Trudeau keep sucking up to foreign tech companies? He was like a darling of this circuit of these conferences and pictures of him with Zuckerberg.
He got in trouble for being on stage with members of Shopify and talking about Canada's need to be more ambitious. And the reaction was like, we should be a little bit more humble.
There's a lot of capital flowing from Silicon Valley back up to Canada. We need to do a better job of generating that capital here and making sure that the support is for here, particularly around scale-ups. But there is something really exciting happening in Canada right now, and we feel it. A lot of folks are looking to come home. A lot of folks are looking to launch things. We do diversity better than just about anyone else.
It's a real pendulum swing over the last 8 years.
It is, and it's not necessarily us, Canada, or our government that's changed its tune. It's the tech world has changed from kind of like partnering up with this sort of like neoliberal, social justice-oriented tech against the Muslim ban tech. And now it's like the crypto thing, like tech leans right now, and tech leans like hardcore libertarian, and tech leans Pierre Poilievre. And back in April, we see the National Post reporting how Justin Trudeau sparked a tech bro revolt. Hundreds of tech leaders and entrepreneurs joined the Shopify founder in post-budget dismay this week, signing an open letter decrying the tax changes.
Mm-hmm.
Tech leaders in Canada, critical of Trudeau. He now is like, I don't know. You know, we've been documenting the slow march towards regulating tech, and the way that Trudeau oriented himself, like, I'm going to be a leader in this, but didn't go far enough, wasn't really part of the antitrust part, and just a bunch of legislative things that certainly hurt the news sector.
Well, I think it's the tech regulation that was promised hasn't been delivered, like the AI regulations through Bill C-27, lost in committee, will never happen because the government can't bring it forward. It'll be a confidence vote. Same thing with open banking regulations that would actually allow for competition in Canada, for Canadians to have more options when it comes to financial services. There are major, like, $4 billion tax credit programs that have been waiting on a review.
Do they still have the shred credits?
That's what I'm talking about.
Every tech person I ever talks about just, like, says, oh, this shred credit program is terrible.
It's a $4 billion program that isn't driving any meaningful results and is often a proxy system to funnel money to branch plant international tech companies rather than supporting local. So there's this dual track thing here. And
it's like a job growth thing where we don't actually own any of the IP. And now, because here's one way that the Trump bump will benefit Canada, a buck is worth $1.40 here, and we've got skilled workers. So isn't that the actual effect here, is that innovation and having the next unicorn company? No, that's that. Like, none of these innovation R&D programs are actually doing that, but they are making us a source of cheap labor.
Well, so again, to track that change, in Marty's story, there was this concern that the U.S. tax policy, which is like basically no taxes, might be so attractive to tech companies that it will pull talent away from Canada.
Uh-huh.
Whereas 8 years ago, we were saying, come to Canada, we are a place for you here. I'll give you one example. Mike Cerbinus, he's the CEO of a health tech company called League. He's a former CEO of Kobo, the e-reader.
Yeah, sure.
In, I guess, 2017, he was very, very vocal about the travel ban because his father is a Greek immigrant that came to Canada following some of the Civil War tensions there, not allowed to come to the United States. So they came to Canada and said, very, very vocal at the time about Canada being a welcoming place.
Yeah.
In April, when the capital tax rate changes dropped, he's responding on Twitter saying, you need to start your new business in the U.S. And I feel like the point of focus on what our tech leaders care about now, or what they believe in the government's capacity to deliver on after seeing it not happen over 8 years, has really shifted the perspective. I don't think that they're just not brave enough to stand up to this anymore. I think it is both watching a government fail to deliver on any of the promises to the tech ecosystem in really meaningful ways, and that more global shift to the right, and watching our neighbors to the south be like, you know what? It's pretty cool to be Elon right now, right? Maybe that's the way.
You don't think that they've lost their spine. You just feel like they've been disillusioned. They believe that there could be more of a like public benefit role and a partnership between tech and government, and now they don't believe in nothing.
Well,
if you were to put on paper, what are the conditions to launch a business? What are the conditions for investment? And one country is like not going to tax you and not going to regulate you. That's a better country for starting a business.
If that was the only lens through which you wanted to view society as well, like part of the reason why the response to the travel ban was so vocal is because these companies had employees in the state that were from those Muslim countries, and they were concerned for their safety or capacity to get in and out of the country. So I do not want to ascribe any particular motivation for why this shift is happening, but I think it's much more important than talking about tariffs or the dollar rate to understand that shift and dig into the reasons.
And corporations were a little bit more vocal in taking progressive positions on things like anti-racism. And now the pendulum has swung the other way.
Yeah. Shopify just announced today a new board member, DHA. She's one of the co-founders of 37 Signals. They make Basecamp and the hate email, mm-hmm. a bunch of other stuff. And he's pretty well known for within 37 Signals basically saying the business caring about stuff other than the business has been a huge distraction. When you come to work, you should only care about that. That is also a transition that Shopify went through during COVID, Black Lives Matter. I've talked to several former Shopify employees who did not feel like leadership's perspective on their capacity to bring their whole selves to work made it a great place to work. And I think Shopify, much like 37 Signals, has been very open that their mission is commerce. And in a really interesting and novel way against large giants like Amazon and things like that. But they are narrow filtering their focus on things that don't factor in, I don't know, mass deportations, filling governments with people that are there to undermine the institutions. Like the fact that Robert Kennedy Jr. is going to be the health secretary is just horrifying. And I just don't think we can have effective reporting on this administration or any administration if we are not factoring in the broader perspective and the impacts. This isn't just about tax policy. And if people think it's just about tax policy, man, wait till January and they're going to find out.
Douglas, we duly note stories that people need to know about. What can you duly note for us today?
So this is an opinion piece coming from Sean McLeff from the Toronto Star.
Mm-hmm.
He noted that the Eglinton Crosstown LRT is now 13 years old.
Oh, Mazel Tov.
It's now entering high school. And this was just a kind of opinion piece connecting this idea of like, think back the days of when they put the shovels in. Who was involved with that? There's some photos of Doug Ford and Dalton McGuinty. He goes on to note a couple things that were happening in 2011. Barack Obama and Stephen Harper were our world leaders. Prince William and Kate Middleton were having a wedding. BlackBerry still existed. I was mm-hmm. still working at BlackBerry. Also some troubling stats here. The London and Paris tunnel took 6 years to build. So 30 years after that, we're taking 13 years to just build a train line. It's been 157 months that the Eglinton Crosstown has been in development. That's double the amount of time it took to build the original University and Bloor subway lines. Now, Sean is lamenting the amount of intense secrecy that Metrolinx and our particular province has in sharing any detail on this, but it's what he closed on that really grinds my gears. He said that no amount of column writing can create a scandal. Only the public can decide what it wants to be upset about. It's up to you. By that, he means the reader. And it is so resigned in defeat as to the use of journalism to inform the public and affect change.
You think he should be leading a crusade?
I think maybe the public would care more if we told the public what was going on. And instead of like an op-ed column, like if you search for information on the Eglinton Crosstown LRT, you find a spattering of coverage and then focus is turned to how bad construction is on the Ontario line. This should be a story that Doug Ford has to deal with every single day. And it comes within a broader context of this province deciding to accelerate alcohol expansion, costing Ontarians about $225 million and potentially more as we take funding from the LCBO. He just gave a $100 million contract to Elon Musk's Starlink, which means that they're paying a premium of $6,000 per person that they're trying to provide internet access in rural Ontario mm-hmm. areas. We live in a province where there are some really dumb and crazy things happening constantly. And to see pieces saying, well, man, we really need the public to care more so we can get at the scandal.
It's amazing to me how angry people were with Kathleen Wynne and how absolutely resigned to a completely dysfunctional society we are with Doug Ford. I think that like there's an interesting conversation to have about whether the format of a traditional legacy family newspaper like the Toronto Star can fuel the rage that is needed for the public. Nothing they put out feels urgent or energetic enough. But I don't know that, I don't know how we can hang this on them. Like, the public here is out to lunch on this government. Like, he gets away with murder.
I agree. But if they're only reminded on certain milestone anniversaries, like when the Eglinton Crosstown construction is old enough to drink, we'll have another column lamenting the secrecy. I do, and I understand there are fewer journalists than ever. There's a lot going on. I think this is this type of thing that you bang the drum on every day. And I know all those media publications that are like, hey, we're doing some pretty good coverage here. We can't get everything. Followed Doug's brother Rob around every single day because of some much more scandalous things.
Just a little crack.
Yeah. Like, and I would like our province to function properly. And I would like to understand when it isn't why it's happening.
Duly noted. That was very Toronto-centric. Let me broaden things out a little bit with my duly noted here. Few stories. Globe and Mail. Doctors identify 27 scurvy cases in northern Saskatchewan as concerns of rural poverty and hunger grow. Also Globe and Mail. New Brunswick measles outbreak spreads to 44 people, mostly unvaccinated children. Here's the good news from Alberta, St. Albert Gazette. After years of outbreak, Alberta sees decline in syphilis rates. They're still at 2,723 with the most recent data, up from 140 in 2014, but down from 3,326. So there's a decline in syphilis. So in Alberta, where sex ed is still something that we're not sure we want kids to have, or in New Brunswick, where people aren't sure that they want vaccinations. And then, I don't know, in Saskatchewan, I don't think there's any controversy over, like, lemons or vitamin C. I just think that there's a terrible problem with poverty and malnutrition. But in Canada, scurvy, measles, and syphilis are problems in 2024.
It's almost like the things society worked really hard to solve in the 20th century were not solved problems and need continuous refresh and upkeep, and then we will see the impacts of them if we ignore them. Duly noted.
That is our show today. Douglas, thank you for joining me. Stick around for some more stories that we're following, but first, let's say goodbye to our guest. Douglas Soltis, where can people find you?
You can just find me on betakit.com. We do all of our best work there.
Here's some other stories that we're following. Further to what I told you about Trump's cabinet and their respective relationship and comments about Canada, Trump has now announced the next U.S. ambassador to Canada. He is a former Michigan congressman, Pete Hoekstra. Unlike the gaggle of deplorable loyalists and cronies and weirdos that Trump has in cabinet, it looks like he's actually picked somebody who does this for a living. Hoekstra served in the U.S. House of Representatives from 1993 until 2011. And he was previously Trump's ambassador to the Netherlands. Forebodingly, Trump has said, in my second term, Pete will help me once again put America first. Former U.S. Ambassador to Canada Bruce Hayman strikes a bit more of a reassuring note when he tells us that this is an experienced ambassador who has Trump's trust, comes from a border state that will have direct knowledge and understanding of Canada. And the early naming of this guy as the guy shows the importance of the Canada-U.S. relationship to the incoming Trump administration. Here's hoping, I guess. Another story that we're following that you may have heard of by now is Trudeau has announced a $250 check for qualifying Canadians and a two-month GST vacation. It's so weird. Going by a City News report, the GST break, which will begin on December 14th and end on February 15th, applies to like a very specific number of items, prepared foods, vegetable trays, restaurant meals, takeout, snacks, covers beer, wine, and cider under 7% alcohol. What wine is under 7% alcohol? This is good for Gen Xers. You can get a nice strong IPA at under 7%, but I don't think the boomers are going to get their boomer juice below 7% alcohol. Children's clothing and footwear, children's toys, books, print newspapers, not digital newspapers, print newspapers, GST is omitted. Puzzles for all ages. Good to know there's no age cutoff on the puzzles you can buy without GST. Christmas trees, no menorahs, JT. This seems like a very normal Canadian, Christian Canadian focused incentive in the vein of a Doug Ford vote buying scheme. A little editorializing from me on this. I also have to wonder, like, is this actually good news for the economy that everyone's going to get a GST vacation starting December 14th? Like, is everybody going to wait till December 14th to do their holiday shopping? Are stores happy about this? It's a weird one. That's our show for today. Thanks for joining me. You can email me about it. I'm at jesse@canadaland.com, and I am on Blue Sky. I read every email you send and everything that you post about me. This episode is produced by James Nicholson. Mixing and mastering is by Caleb Thompson. Our director of audio is Max Collins, who also did the fact check on this episode. I'm the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Radio. Hear Chalmers Johnson on Blowback, the consequences of U.S. foreign policy. That's Alternative Radio, Wednesday afternoons at 4, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby.